Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. We will begin on the front page with the article, McLean County Adds 260 Cases, by Paul Sweech. Tougher state COVID rules are coming to parts of southern Illinois and the Chicago area. Whether central Illinois counties will face similar restrictions was unknown on Monday, but infection numbers increased throughout the region. Dr. Aaron Rossi, CEO of Pekin-based Reditis Laboratories, told the Pantograph on Monday that 10,656 COVID tests were processed at the lab on Sunday, with 1,623 test results coming back positive for a positivity rate of 15.2%. Reditis does testing at the McLean County Fairgrounds testing site, among others. Never seen it like this, Rossi said, of the extremely high number of tests processed. In McLean County, two more residents have died of the virus and 260 additional people have been diagnosed since Friday, County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said. The deceased were a man in his 50s, associated with an assisted living, supported living facility, and a man in his 70s, not associated with any long-term care facility. That means that 41 have died of the virus since March. The death of the man was reported by the Illinois Department of Public Health on Saturday, but confirmed by the County Health Department on Monday. Most county health departments stopped reporting COVID numbers during the weekend several weeks ago. Weekend numbers are now included on Monday numbers. The percent of county residents tested who have tested positive for the virus in the past week rose to 8.7%, compared with 7.5% on Friday. That number has been increasing for several days. Of the more than 109,000 COVID tests of county residents since March, 5% have tested positive, compared with 4.6% on Friday. Following U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines, IDPH and county health departments are now reporting confirmed and probable COVID cases combined. Previously, the McLean County Health Department just reported confirmed cases. A confirmed case is verified by lab testing. A probable case meets clinical criteria, meaning the person has COVID-19 symptoms. If a probable case is later confirmed, the case will be counted once. A total number of COVID cases in McLean County since March 19th is 5,508, including confirmed and probable cases, McKnight said. Because probable cases are now included, McLean County's total number of cases increased by 670 since Friday, said McKnight. The 952 people isolating at home on Monday was 64 more than on Friday. 13 people are hospitalized, the same number as Friday, with none in intensive care, she said. Since March, 4,502 county residents have recovered from the virus. With probable cases now included, that's 304 more than on Friday. Among other central Illinois counties, LaSalle County reported 5 additional deaths, 2 men in their 70s, 2 men in their 80s, and a man in his 90s, to bring the number of COVID-related deaths there to 81. In addition, 158 additional people have been diagnosed, increasing the case total to 3,749. Tazewell County reported the death of a man in his 70s who was not a resident of a long-term care facility, increasing that county's number of fatalities to 64. The number of confirmed cases increased by 355 to 3,810. Livingston County reported 177 new cases, including 64 Pontiac Correctional Center inmates, increasing that county's case total to 1,153. In Woodford County, 119 more people were diagnosed since Friday to bring its caseload to 1,040. Logan County confirmed 84 additional cases since Friday, increasing its total to 877. And Ford County announced 71 new cases, bringing its total to 396 confirmed and probable cases. Governor J.B. Pritzker and IDPH also announced the additional COVID restrictions in 20 southern Illinois counties and the 4 northern Illinois counties. While each of the 11 COVID-19 monitoring regions is under resurgence mitigations because of high testing or hospitalization numbers, limiting bar and restaurant service to outdoors and gatherings to 25 people or 25% of capacity, 3 have now qualified for stricter restrictions. The second tier of rules, limiting restaurant table sizes to 6 and prohibiting gatherings of more than 10 people, have applied to Region 1, Northwestern Illinois for Monday. Starting Wednesday, Region 5, the southern tip of the state, and Region 7 and 8, counties in south and west suburban Chicago, move into Tier 2 as well. Statewide, IDPH reported 10,573 new confirmed and probable cases and 14 additional deaths, bringing the state's total since March to 498,560 cases and 10,210 deaths. The state began including probable cases in its count on Friday. The statewide 7-day positivity rate for COVID cases as a percent of tests for the previous week was 11.4%, compared with 9.6% on Friday. As of Sunday night, 4,409 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, with 857 of them in intensive care and 376 on ventilators. Pritzker also said Monday that he welcomed Joe Biden's immediate response as president-elect to the coronavirus pandemic, signaling the incoming Democratic administration's plans could bring welcome relief, healthcare assistance, and relief from destruction caused by the virus. Biden's first public comments after meeting with a newly formed coronavirus task force were to ask the nation to wear a face covering to slow transmission of the virus, something his defeated opponent, President Donald Trump, had often mocked. And Biden promised during the campaign that he would make testing for and tracing the virus free and widespread. "I've been calling for a national mask mandate for some time," Pritzker said at his daily COVID-19 briefing in Chicago. "Think about the states around us and the fact that they don't have mitigations, and many of those states, and that has an effect on Illinois, where we do have a mask mandate." Another story on the front page is making the math work. COVID complicates Central Illinois teacher shortage. This is by Kelsey Watznauer. The ongoing pandemic has brought new difficulties in the long-running problem of not having enough substitute teachers and paraprofessionals, a situation that has forced some administrators or other educators into the classroom to cover classes. "It's dangerously close to if we don't have subs or classroom supervisors, an adult who can monitor students, we're not going to be able to keep all the buildings open," said Kristen Weichel, superintendent at McLean County Unit 5. As far back as 2017, 60% of districts reported a substitute teacher shortage in an Illinois Association of Regional Superintendent of Schools study, and 89% of Central Illinois districts had trouble filling teacher positions. Causes ranged from a limited number of new teachers coming from education programs to more moving out of state. Then came COVID. Gary Tipsard, superintendent at Leroy, said, "Having enough substitute teachers to cover classes in a normal year has been a challenge, and the implications associated with COVID have just made that more challenging." Nationwide, several states have seen surges in educators filing for retirement or taking leaves of absence. In Salt Lake City, Utah, more than 80 teachers resigned or retired early because of concerns about COVID-19 in schools. Some were fined $1,000 for failing to give 30 days notice. The increased difficulty of finding substitutes is forcing districts to more frequently shift their staffing, with teachers who provide instruction in specialized classes instead of being drafted to fill in for absent teachers. The departures are straining staff in places that were dealing with a shortage of teachers and substitutes even before the pandemic created an education crisis. Because many of the subs are retirement age, whether they've retired from teaching or other fields, some are concerned about health risks associated with being exposed to so many people, Hayworth Superintendent Lisa Taylor said. Some districts report that more teachers and paraprofessionals have had to take extended time away from the schools when they are sick or come in close contact with someone who has tested positive with COVID-19. Traditionally, if staff were sick, they might stay home a day or two. But now, if they're sick, they have to either have an alternate diagnosis or get a negative test result, Weichel said. Test results are seemingly taking a little bit longer right now, and the big issue is if someone has come into close contact with someone who's been positive, you know, they have to quarantine for 14 days. That's 2 weeks worth of school that we have to have a sub. Given their months of practice in the spring and early fall, classroom teachers have still been able to teach remotely, if they're well enough, while they await test results or have to quarantine. With two of the largest local districts, Unit 5 and Bloomington District 87, recently welcoming students back to in-person learning, some area districts also could feel a strain on their pool of available substitutes in the coming weeks. It's not just us, it's all the schools. Obviously, most of us share the same sub pool, so we're all needing people for longer periods of time, Weichel said. District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley said the shortage hasn't had much effect this semester, but as we look toward the second semester where we plan to bring our 7th through 12th grade students back, it could become an issue. It is the latest wrinkle in a roller coaster for educators that started more than 10 months ago. Illinois schools in March were canceled as COVID cases increased. Districts over the summer could decide whether to have in-person or remote classes or a mix. They then went about hiring. Our office staff spent time this summer proactively reaching out to over 300 substitutes in the region and recruiting others in our community in an effort to help build our substitute pool, anticipating an even bigger need this school year, said Paul Dieters, superintendent at Lexington. But since then, some districts have opened and then closed as infection rates surge. Some educators didn't come back. Laura O'Donnell, superintendent at Olympia, said she's noticed many of the usual substitutes are choosing not to work in the schools because of the virus. Most districts have increased incentives in recent years and focused on building up their sub pool in preparation for returning to school during the pandemic. With the help of the Regional Office of Education, O'Donnell said the administration and staff built up the sub pool over the summer as well, recruiting some recent Olympia graduates to help out. In Downs-based Tri-Valley, Superintendent David Mouser said they've avoided vacancies thanks to the teachers covering for each other whenever possible. Our teachers and paraprofessionals deserve all of the credit for making this work. It's all hands on deck at this point, and we are committed to staying in person for our kids, he said. When several classroom positions couldn't be filled by substitute teachers, Destin Underwood, a special education teacher at Normal Community West High School, stepped into a culinary classroom Thursday afternoon when he would normally be working with his students. This is usually the time I meet one-on-one with my students on my caseload, so I'm emailing them, checking with their teachers, and doing all of my paperwork while I'm doing this too, he said. Despite the typically hands-on subject matter, the class of West students, mostly sophomores, sat behind laptops and phone screens with their unusual classroom teacher instructing from home. It's really like I'm a certified teacher to be here while their teacher is teaching them, Underwood said. Because I'm a special ed teacher, I have to dabble in everything anyway, so it's fun. Aaron Kostanik, an El Paso resident who has been working in area schools as a substitute teacher for the last 7 years, said she has noticed more and more calls for open positions in the last few weeks. From my experience, I'll admit recently it's been a little harder to say yes, just not knowing all the details of what COVID-19 related issues are going on in each building. And I can understand why some people are maybe stepping back from it, or it's a little harder, she said. For Kostanik, being a stay-at-home parent works well with the flexibility of filling in as a substitute teacher. But weighing the risk of exposure has been a little bit of a struggle. It's very beneficial. You very much enjoy it, and it's a little bit of pay. But then you try to weigh the risk of one day of substitute teaching, what you might bring back into your own home, she said. Kostanik said when she became certified, the process was pretty easy, and in recent years, the Illinois State Board of Education has worked to streamline getting substitutes into classrooms where they are needed. If you have a degree, especially if you're between jobs or looking for something around the holidays, I mean, it's clearly in demand right now, she said. It's great to be able to go home at the end of the day, feeling like you've really made a difference to at least a couple of individuals in particular, and you're doing something well worth your time. Some states have taken steps to cut red tape and get more educators in the classroom. The Missouri Board of Education made it easier to become a substitute teacher under an emergency rule. Instead of the previous requirement, 60 hours of college credit, eligible substitutes now only need to obtain a high school diploma, complete a 20-hour online training course, and pass a background check. Iowa responded similarly, relaxing coursework requirements and the minimum working age for newly hired substitutes. Locally, at Wednesday's school board meeting, Roger Baldwin, Director of Human Resources at Unit 5, will give a report on substitute teachers and paraprofessionals, and the board is expected to vote on a substitute surge pay. Weichel, the superintendent, said even though the board voted to raise the pay for substitutes last year, that might help get some people to sub here over a neighboring district, but it doesn't take away from the fact that all of our schools need more subs. Lack of available staff was mentioned in Unit 5's August plan as one of the reasons schools could return to remote learning. But I don't know that that resonated with all of our families at the time. They were maybe thinking more about the virus and getting sick, not just we have to have subs, we have to have teachers, we have to have support staff, Weichel said. If the schools could not be staffed by teachers, substitutes, or classroom supervisors, Unit 5 wouldn't necessarily close the whole district, but would instead identify which buildings were struggling most with staffing, she said. Those would be the buildings that we maybe would have to temporarily close. O'Donnell, the Olympia official, said they are making progress overall. But there are days, she said, that we are still struggling to cover all open positions. In more local news, we have Sila to Run for Council in Normal by Sierra Henry. Normal resident Carl Sila announced his campaign for Normal Town Council, identifying lower taxes and spending cuts as key issues. Sila, who has a background in accounting and holds a degree in engineering, said in a statement Saturday that he will use his unique skill set to problem solve ways to cut spending. Having priorities is key, and I'd like to lower property taxes, said Sila. Nominating petitions for the April 6th election must be filed between November 16th and 23rd. The mayor and three council seats are open. Normal council members are elected at large. Sila is a McLean County native and a graduate of McLean County Unit 5 schools. He enjoys spending time with his children at Normal parks, trails, and pools. I want to make sure Normal continues to be a great place for families like mine, Sila said. I want Normal to be a town where my kids can not only grow up safe and happy, but also a town they'd like to stay in once they do grow up. Sila ran as a write-in candidate for the Normal Town Council in April 2019. Chairman of the Normal Planning Commission, A.J. Zimmerman, and a Bradley University professor, Brad McMillan, announced intentions to run for Normal Town Council in August. Normal Mayor Chris Coos also is seeking re-election for a fifth term, April 6th. Willamwe is not seeking new term. Bloomington City Councilman Mboka Willamwe on Sunday said he will not seek re-election. I look forward to serving out the remainder of my term and responding to the needs of Ward 3 residents. When the time is right, I will also share what lies ahead for me and reflect on my service for the residents of Ward 3, he said. Willamwe was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo and has worked at Illinois State University since 1997. He was appointed to the council in March 2011 to finish 2 years on Kevin Hetty's term. He was elected in April 2013. The City of Bloomington Council Advances Indigenous Peoples Day by Annalisa Trofimik. The Bloomington City Council on Monday approved the next step in replacing Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day as a city holiday on the second Monday in October. Alderman Jen Carrillo, who has been leading the effort, said the measure is about acknowledging the treatment that Indigenous peoples have received since Columbus arrived as a community. The council over the summer began talking about replacing the holiday, recognizing the Italian explorer and navigator. Communities across the country have made similar moves, and state legislation has been introduced to follow suit in Illinois. Alderman Jamie Mathey on Monday said the city should reach a compromise similar to other cities where Indigenous people are celebrated on the same day as a celebration for Italian heritage. Let's celebrate the heritages of both, Mathey said. Former Ward 6 Alderman Kevin Lower participated in the public comment portion of the meeting and denounced the idea of replacing Columbus Day because he said the measure would not honor Columbus's accomplishments. We have to understand that Indigenous folks are Americans too, and we need to come together as Americans and stop this divisiveness, said Lower. We are Bloomington. We are Americans. That's what we need to dwell upon. Alderwoman Joni Painter said she thinks it is fine to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day, but that it is not to be replaced with another celebratory day. A lot of people consider that to be cancel culture, and I want no part of that. That is not inclusive. It doesn't mean we won't talk about Columbus anymore, but we certainly shouldn't be celebrating Columbus, said Carrillo. It is a paradox. It is completely contradictory to celebrate Columbus and Indigenous Peoples Day. Carrillo added that a separate day celebrating Italian-American heritage could be an option if residents decide they want to do that. The council voted Monday to have city staff draft an ordinance for their approval. In other business, council members discussed proposals for the coming year's property tax levy. Officials are proposing a combined tax levy of $25,613 between the city and Bloomington Public Library. While this is $166,426 higher than last year's tax levy, tax rates are not expected to increase, according to a memo from the city's finance department. Instead, officials said the revenue will be generated by an expected increase in equalized assessed value, EAV, which is based on the total taxable value of properties in the city. The final proposal will be presented to the council on December 7th. Council members also on Monday voted unanimously to approve longtime Bloomington resident Molly Ward to replace Alderman Scott Black, who resigned last month. Ward will serve through April 2021 and will have to run for the seat at that time. There were 9 applicants and others who were interested in the position. "It's great to be able to choose an exceptional person among a group of exceptional people," said Mayor Terry Renner. Ward will complete Black's term through April 2021 and will have to run for the seat in the 2021 municipal elections. Renner recognized Black for his time on the council, which ran 2013 through 2020. Black received a plaque noting his service and a thank you from Renner. Next, we have Bloomington native retires from Marine Corps. U.S. Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant Daniel Brennan retired August 31, 2020, after 27 and a half years of active duty service. Brennan was born and raised in Bloomington and graduated from Bloomington High School in 1992. He joined the Marine Corps in April 1993. During his military career, he was stationed in California, North Carolina, Oklahoma, and Texas. He traveled to 20 countries, including 2 tours in Iraq in support of the Global War on Terror, a deployment for 6 months to Afghanistan in support of Operation Enduring Freedom, and other deployments including Kosovo, Israel, Mongolia, Morocco, and Germany. His dedicated service included leadership as an instructor in artillery at Fort Sill and serving the last 7 years as a regiment operations chief. Brennan's personal decorations include the Legion of Merit, Meritorious Service Medal X2 Award, Navy and Marine Corps Commendation Medal X3, and Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal X3. He received the Ancient Order of St. Barbara in June 2016. The family had a small dinner celebration in his honor in late August in Bloomington after a large celebration planned in Dallas was canceled due to coronavirus restrictions. He completed his Bachelor of Arts degree while in the Marine Corps and will pursue a master's degree at the University of North Texas beginning in December. Brennan lives with his wife, Angela, and their children in Carrollton, Texas, near Dallas. His parents are Jim and Lois Brennan of Bloomington, and his parents-in-law are Tim and Margie Simmons of Bloomington. In brief business news, we have, in a settlement announced Monday, federal regulators will require Zoom to strengthen its security in a proposed settlement of allegations that the video conferencing service misled users about its level of security for meetings. And General Motors recalled more than 217,000 cars and SUVs in the U.S. and Canada because transmission oil can leak, causing them to stop moving or possibly catch fire. GM said in government documents posted last weekend that it has no reports of crashes, fires, or injuries. Also, researchers stopped a study early after finding that a shot of an experimental medicine every 2 months worked better than daily pills to help keep women from catching HIV from an infected sex partner. And the United States faced its first review in 5 years at the UN's main human rights body on Monday, with the detentions of migrant children and the killings of unarmed Black people during the Trump administration's tenure among issues high on the minds. And this concludes the first part of the reading for the Pantograph on Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with the second half.